lo and behold, ladies and gentlemen, season 5 of Chewing the Gristle is upon us. It's been a little while, folks, but it's going to be worth the wait. We're going to be featuring a lot of convivial conversations with various musical potentates, most of which you've heard of. Some are going to be some new discoveries. That's why I'm here, to bring forth the chewable gristle matter to you via the information superhighway. Brought to you, of course, by our friends at Wildwood Guitars in beautiful Louisville, Colorado, and our friends at Fishman Transducers of beautiful Andover, Massachusetts. Both I've had great long-standing relationships with and continue to do so, and we're very grateful for their continued support in this endeavor of giving you the highest quality and chewable gristle possible. Now, without any further ado, folks, let's get down and dirty with some Chewing the Gristle Season 5. Buckle up. Folks, a young man who's taking the blues world by storm. He's been all over the doggone world. As a matter of fact, for this conversation, he's down in Buenos Aires, spreading the good news of the blues. My friend Stephen Hull from beautiful Racine, Wisconsin, a name you'll be hearing a lot in the future. Let's chew the gristle. Ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, we have convened once again on the crazy cyber airwaves for another edition of Chewing the Gristle with yours truly, Greg Kalk. I'm here with a young man who's been all over the world this year playing his blues guitar and singing up a storm. Stephen Hull, ladies and gentlemen, hailing from beautiful Racine, Wisconsin. Stephen, how the heck are you?
I am doing just fine. How are you, Greg?
You know what? I can't complain. I was kind of running around to get in here. I'm in my room over my garage now that I've set up for my new orange room, and the sink wasn't working in the bathroom, so I was attempting to fix that, and I realized, holy shnikes, I got to get out there. So I've just run out, and I'm clean and ready to engage in convivial conversation. Now, how are you doing?
Well, I'm in beautiful, sunny Buenos Aires, Argentina.
Oh, you are?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
So when I say you're all over the world, we're not kidding around.
No, not even a little bit.
So what's happening down there? Give us the lowdown.
I came out here to spend some nice quality time with some friends, play a few shows. It was nice to spend New Year's down this way, because as a fellow Wisconsinite, you know, it's cold.
Yes, it's cold where that's we are, a fact. Where we live.
So this is the first time, I think, in my life, I've been warm in January. Like, this is I've never sweat in January before. This is amazing.
So what shows are you doing down there?
Oh, just little ones. There was a couple little ones to start out. And then we have we're inaugurating we're starting off the season strong at the Bebop Club, a club where I played at this past year, 2023. Wow.
Yes.
with the Albert King tribute band, and that was amazing. It's a very nice spot here in Buenos Aires, and I love it. They always bring the best vibes there, and they always come for a good time.
Excellent. Now, what kind of a flight is it to get down there?
Ooh, well, I don't even know if they have a direct flight from Chicago, but if they did, I would pay so much for it. this time I went from Chicago to, gosh, where did I go? Washington, D.C.
Okay.
Not Dulles, but the other one.
Gotcha.
And Reagan. Then we went to Reagan, yes.
Yes.
Then we went to Miami. Unfortunately, I think the crew didn't show up, so I had a layover. I had to spend the night there. I mean, they gave me a hotel voucher and, you know, some food and drink tickets or whatever. So I wasn't too pressed. I built in a nice cushion so I could afford
nice
the delay. But then it's just a nice 8-hour plane ride.
That isn't horrible. I mean, that's like going to Europe, so it's not horrible.
Exactly. That was my thought process the first time I went there. I was like, you know, this isn't so bad. After going to France the first time in 2022, I was like, okay, I think I can do just about anything.
Right.
And then I after I got back from Argentina the first time last year, I went to Burkina Faso, Africa, That's when I realized flying, that's a long, that was a long trip.
Yeah, that's a long way. Yep, absolutely. So let me ask you this. When did stuff start really taking off for you? What was the impetus to escape the cheddar curtain, as it were, and start playing all over the world and all over the country and so on and so forth?
I would say the moment things started becoming possible, I would be when I played at Rose's Lounge in Chicago. After that, I just went to an open jam session on a Wednesday night, and Tony, the owner, he asked me to play at the Chicago Blues Fest that summer. I was like, yeah, why would I say no?
Right.
And then everything since then, you know, it's had its ups and downs. But I would say that would be the first major event that was able to get me the publicity that I kind of needed to start moving around more. And then I got really lucky with a mutual friend of ours, from a certain record label, was looking, helping look for some young talent to go to Europe. And I think once everybody saw Stephen Hull Europe, they said, we want them too. And
right.
I haven't stopped working since.
Excellent. So what was your introduction to blues music, and who were the first artists that kind of tripped your trigger, as it were?
Ooh. So a lot of people don't know this, but my parents didn't really listen to blues until I came home. So I brought them the blues, both literally and figuratively. I don't know. There's this old show you might not have ever heard of it, but Sanford and Son.
Oh, I remember it. Yeah.
Well, there's an episode where B.B. King comes on, and I remember that episode more than anything in the world, because he was like, they made it a big deal. They're like, oh, it's B.B. King. B.B. King was like, well, it's a cool name. What's this guy all about? And he came on, and he was just the coolest, smoothest guy I've ever, you know, seen. And he had right. this nice leisure suit on, man. I was like, I want to be like that guy. And so that was my first time seeing anybody in the blues world. And I also had the fortunate position that my dad grew into liking the blues, that we would listen to a blues station out of Milwaukee. It was 1290. I forget the name of the session, the thing, the program. But it was
1290 AM. Right. Yeah.
Yes. Phil Anderson was the guy. And they'd have a Saturday morning blues brunch. And I would listen to that like every 2 weeks. I would go get my hair cut. And I would hear some of my favorite songs, I guess. Like I listened to the radio, Motown, all that stuff. And I loved it. But it was something about what I would hear on that Saturday morning that just it stepped right in here. I'll never forget when I heard Artie. Blues Boy White. He's saying, I'm going to marry my mother-in-law. And I thought that was such a weird thing to say. I wasn't no more, but I didn't understand then. I understand now, but it stuck with me all this time. But after listening to all that growing up, I kind of started looking up things online. So YouTube, God bless it.
Yeah.
I found my group of artists that I really like, I figured out real fast that Albert King
right.
is the top of the top for me. You know, I've often told people his vocabulary might go from here to here, but it within that range, my goodness.
You're right. It never gets old.
Never. I can't understand how it never gets old. He can play the same line, the whole song. I would listen to it.
Right.
It would mean something each time.
Right. Exactly. But I think that's the way with, you know, Albert King, of course, being, you know, a prime example of that. But, you know, B.B. King's the same way in his mm-hmm. way. Albert Collins and basically all people in that blues, you know, the blues rock realm, you know, even blues jazz folk. I mean, it's like... they have their signature thing that's more based on emotion than it is. I mean, there's a certain degree of technical prowess that they use to emote that limited vocabulary, but it's the emotion they pack into it that hits you right in the feels every time. That's why it never gets old.
Yep. Because emotion never gets old.
That's right.
Yeah. And that's why we have a job.
That is correct. That is correct. Well, it is amazing. I mean, as much as, you know, I've listened to a lot of different stuff over the years and you know, ranges from all over the map. But I would say 90% of the time, it's blues-oriented material that I end up, you know, listening to when I'm just walking or driving the car or whatever. I mean, or blues imbued rock. I mean, it's the blues thing that goes through it. And, yeah. And there was a time where I was really into, you know, listening to, you know, a bunch of fusion stuff and, you know, even some proggy stuff and so on and so forth. And I still love that stuff. And when it comes out, like, oh, I haven't heard this in a while, but I have a tendency to, shall we say, gravitate towards the more soul imbued utterances. Ooh. How about yourself? What do you find yourself listening to on the regular?
Gosh, well, I'm a jazz fanatic, so like I fell in love with like Count Basie and Duke Ellington, you know. Yes. the big bands of the 20th century, and then Oscar Peterson. Gosh, it's if I could play guitar like he played the piano, I don't like, I still would choose blues, but like, dang, man, you know, right. That's a lot. Like, he just, his hands, I watched several videos. I'm like, that doesn't make physical sense.
Yeah. He was,
that you're also, he was a monster. He was, yeah, like, no, you, doubt. Like you.
Hang on now.
yes. I'll never forget. We played at Kochanski's, in Milwaukee. It was for the benefit for Jimmy Schutte.
Oh yeah, yeah.
And they didn't, you know, we went up there, I played and I had fun or whatever. And someone said, Greg Cock is here. And I said, no. No, I'm glad my turn is up, because if I had known you were in the building, I probably would have folded, packed up my guitar and walked off the stage. But a friend of mine, we were standing there watching you. He was on stage, Zane. I think you're familiar with him.
Oh, yeah.
We were both watching you play, and you did something where you kind of, it was like you were playing the G string, but like you're moving up and kept going. I was like, we both stopped and just looked at each other and were like, what is going on?
Skullduggery is what's going,
yes,
on.
Yes. Skullduggery. That's the only way I can describe it. You blew our minds, and it hasn't come back together fully yet.
Oh, you're too kind. Well, I'll tell you what, we've done some shows together this past year, and your band and yourself, I mean, it's a powerhouse unit, and I encourage everybody to go out and see it if you're in their neighborhood. And speaking of that, what are your plans? I mean, I know that you've got these international trips that you're doing, and there has been talk about, you know, some recording possibilities that might be manifesting and so on and so forth. So I know you probably can't divulge too much that isn't set in stone, but what's kind of the outlook for 2024?
In 2024, I'm saying this now, clear my throat. My fellow people of Earth, yes. I will be putting out my debut album.
Yes.
If it kills me. Well, hopefully it doesn't, but if it does... I'm putting that out. I'm looking forward to playing more festivals, more traveling more. I'd like to get some more shows on the West Coast. I've only ever been out there once, and it was too short of a time. Yeah. I want to the East Coast finally playing. I just want to go everywhere, you know, anywhere that they can pay us.
Right. That's I wanna always see. A good thing.
Yeah. So I had a nice conversation about payment and what gigs to take, so to speak,
yes,
with several of the magnates of the business. And they're like, yeah, you're doing it right, but, you know, charge more. And I said, oh, all right.
Right.
I can't argue with that.
Right. Well, as I like to say, it's not all about the money, but it is a little bit.
Yeah, it is a little bit. Like, I'm there for the fun, but pay me a little. Yes, come
exactly.
on.
Exactly correct.
Oh, man. But where are you going? You're the one who's going everywhere, man.
Well, you know, it's what's so bizarre is that it took me until, you know, up until, I mean, I can't complain. Everything that I've done over the years, I've been grateful to do it. And I got a little nostalgic over the last few days because my wife had off between Christmas and New Year. So we were going through a bunch of boxes that we wanted to pare down. And it was a memories box. And I'm seeing all of these articles and, you know, old calendars of where we've been playing and so on and so forth. But I mean, the band, we would tour Europe, you know, going on 20 years. I've been going over there, you know, and we'd go over there maybe once or twice a year. And in the States, we would do gigs here and there. You know, we'd have like a anchor gig and we'd put some gigs around it, but but most of the time, I mean, I've been to all the states except for Alaska, either doing clinics or shows of some sort, but most of them were clinics or band, you know, clinics that were sponsored by Fender or something like that. So it wasn't really until, 2 years ago that we really played coast to coast and border to border, just playing. And that's a blast. And I got to say that all the stuff I've done over the years, I mean, again, you know, my situation was I had four kids, you know, my wife wanted to stay home with the kids for a period of time that ended up being for like 15 years. So I had to go out and, you know, and as you know, yeah, playing guitar and making a living, you know, it's fraught with peril. So
that's one way to put it.
To the point where I've got all these other things that I'm still doing, but now I can just go out and play. And all of those things I've done for whatever many years, people, and thank God for the internet, as you said, and YouTube and so on and so forth, that, you know, we can book gigs pretty much wherever. And as long as they promote it decently, there's going to be enough people show up because of all the different footwork I've done over the years that they'll actually come out. So we're just going to keep on hitting it, man. So we go out to the West Coast, actually, at the we're doing this, ladies and gentlemen, on the 3rd of January. We're going out on the 19th. We start in Minneapolis, go to Denver, down to Phoenix, and then out to up the West Coast.
Oh, and nice.
We'll get back second week in February. So
so you get to be warm.
Well, hopefully. I mean, I always get a little worried, you know, wintertime wise going out, because you never know what the weather's going to be like when you're driving, right?
But
I know you got that Bronco with the trailer. I just got a new vessel for touring. So I'm waiting to get it back. We bought it. It's one of those transit cargo vans that I'm having modded into having a second row of seats and a bulkhead and all that kind of stuff. So
yeah,
I
should be
doing that like next week.
Oh, dude. When you get some snow, I want you to post a video of you doing a donut in it.
Yes. Yes. But yeah, we're going to go out there and cause some trouble and see what shakes. So, you know, that's what's kind of nice about, I don't know how festivals, it's different because you have to book those in advance. But for whatever reason, you know, we only book like 3 months out, and that's been working, which is awesome because, you know, usually it's like, oh, you got to get booked 6 months out in order to get the decent gigs. And I've found that, you know, we book about 3 months out and that's working. So there's a degree of freedom in that.
Yes.
And as long as we're able to make the dough, I say let the good times roll.
I heard that because I'm doing a hefty mix of, so I just, I've got two tours, not set in stone. You know, I haven't signed any paperwork yet. But Romania is the anchor of one of them,
right,
for like 3 weeks out over in Europe for that. And then I come back and then another tour in November for a month going all over Europe with that. But, you know, that I got those done, I want to say, in December. You know, right. Got everything, got all the paperwork shaken. And so, like, you know, I'm planning out, but also I want to leave enough space for that, you know, I get the right things at the right time because things tend to pop up. Hopefully I can make it down to King Biscuit again. I did a solo set this past year and, you know, I loved it. Everybody loved it. It was a nice time. It was warm.
Yes.
It was warm.
That's key. Yep.
But now I'd be able to bring my band, I believe is what we're aiming for. And then Chicago Blues Fest. I played there twice this past year. And I think everything went pretty well.
Excellent.
I got to say that the only thing that I was robbed of was a warm day when I was on the main stage. So it was kind of overcast and a little bit rainy. And so I looked out at, you know, the empty seats, and I was like, you know, that didn't, you know, it wasn't the people, because, you know, I was happy to see the people, but, you know, just seeing the empty chairs, I was like, oh, this could have been a really nice day.
Yeah, you never know. And that stuff, it's out of your control, right? So you
but
just
the good
up,
thing is,
yes.
When by the time, you know, my set had ended, there was a lot less empty seats.
Excellent.
That's all I can ever really hope for. I just go out there, do my best, and see what comes my way.
Absolutely. Now, will your band be going with you on this Europe trip, or is there like a core rhythm section that goes for these things?
So in Europe, I bring my band.
Yeah, nice.
South America, I've got to get a little bit more pull, get some more fans down here. That's kind of why I'm here.
Right, sure.
Get some more fans. You know, an album would help a lot because, you know, it is, you know, all the short flights and different hotels and stuff down here would add up for three or four people on the road. So we tend to use pickup bands and stuff like that in South America. But I think in about a year's time, I think we'll be undeniable, undeniable unit. Like, you know, it's like, hey, you want Steven at all? You got to have the experience, baby.
Right. Exactly. Because that's really the thing is, you know, being able to go with your own band is, you never feel like you're really doing your thing until you have your own band, right?
Yes. Because, you know, you can play originals or covers, doesn't really matter. But you tend to play them a certain way.
Sure.
You know, and if you're fortunate enough to have your own band, you tend to work out with them how you want it to be played.
Right.
And so, if you take a classic like Big Leg Woman by Freddie King that I've turned into my own little thing, it's kind of hard to come into a town land where we don't speak the same primary language and say, hey, I would like you guys to sharp the one every time before we go in. There's going to be an F in there somewhere. I'll cue you, you know, all that fun stuff. So, you know, we just kind of we've established how I like things, and that's where you're going to get the best, you know, show out of me, because I can just focus on enjoying the music and playing it and letting it flow through me versus conducting.
Right. Well, plus you find that, you know, not only are there the nuances of arrangement, but with blues and roots oriented music, there's such a stylistic approach that if you don't have a rhythm section that you're familiar with, you never know. I mean, for instance, you know, drummers' shuffles are as different as, you know what I mean? And that can be scary.
And I, it's funny, Dylan, I love your son. I love him. Love him.
Thank you.
We would play it with Misha Siegfried at the Jazz Estate, and then he did some open jams with me at Puddler's Hall, I think. And just listening to him shuffle, I was just like, I could play with this guy all day. You got a good one there, you know?
Yeah, I mean, he's worked on it. I mean, and that's the thing, too. It's like it's like the shuffle and grooves that might be perceived by people that are into more quote unquote sophisticated music. You know, they think, well, that's, you know, that I know shuffles. But check this out. You know, there's some more technically astute thing, but to do a good shuffle is freaking hard. And, and to have like a wealth of different shuffles to be able to draw from.
Yeah. Oh, and there's so many different kinds, and that's kind of I've gone through a few of them with, you know, my drummer, Victor,
who's great.
He's man, hey, you've dealt with drummers. You know how easy it is to get rid of one. And he's been with me for a few years now.
Yes, he's fantastic. Plus, he's a good showman.
He makes me sick sometimes. Like, a lot of times I'll stop and just watch him. And everyone's like, you doing that for show? I'm like, no, it's entertaining. I'm at the show too.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, between the difference between a flat tire, a box car, a double, you know, you know, and, you know, this, and when it comes to double shuffles, I think those are like my favorite, you know, just just the way that it's, I guess I can only describe it as like knocking around. Like that's to me what it feels like. It's just, it warms my heart. And, you know, when we first started doing our version of Caledonia, he was, it was, you know, not quite a double and it was still sounded good, but I was like, man, if you just get that extra little in there, oh, we take it to another level. And so he kept working on it. Now that his left hand is something serious, man. Yes. Oh, man. And every time I hear that, we get going, I could be having the worst day of my life. Hit that double shuffle like that.
Right.
I'm having a great time.
Absolutely. And that's important. You know, it's important. It's good to have a band that you're as entertained to watch as hopefully the people are.
Yeah. Because, you know, you never know. And Chano Cruz, we added him September. Yeah, in September. We've been working together for the last couple of years on different projects and stuff like that. But my my main bass player of the last couple of years, Sam Winterheimer, which you might be familiar with him.
Yeah, absolutely. Yep.
He moved. He moved away. And I was like, dude, oh, come on. You know,
where did he go?
He moved down to Atlanta. So it's nice to know he's, you know, he's doing well and enjoying life and, you know, settling in down there. But it's like, oh, man, we were just starting, you know.
Right.
I haven't even released the album yet.
Right. Well, it's interesting. I mean, as you start to do more stuff, do you envision, you know, maybe moving elsewhere, or do you don't see the need for it per se? Because you can travel for like forever. I've been able to travel from here to do whatever I need to do. But, you know, there are different advantages to both staying by home and staying in the middle of the country and being able to get everywhere from here. But then there's also the thought of, well, if you're in a place that's a little bit more hardwired to the music industry, a number of different things would be a little more convenient as far as being a professional musician.
Mm-hmm. I'd have to say I'm not married. I have no kids.
Yeah.
So I'm open to the idea of being everywhere and nowhere all at once.
Yeah. Sure.
It's because, you know, I would like to have maybe a few apartments, you know. Hold on 1 second. Let me go ahead and put this in Do Not Disturb. There we go. But I'd like to, you know, have apartments where it makes sense, you know, as long as, you know, I can keep it financially feasible and logical.
Sure.
Have apartments, you know, where I can, you know, if I'm blowing through the West Coast, well, maybe I do a long stint or whatever. And then I go relax my apartment in San Diego or something.
Right.
And then, you know, keep a house here in the Midwest. I'm thinking Racine County, somewhere out there where I have a lot of land and a house tucked away where can't nobody see it.
Yes.
And then, you know, so maybe a nice flat. Gosh, I've been traveling abroad for too long. A flat.
A flat, yes, of course.
A flat somewhere in Chicago.
Yeah.
Somewhere in Chicago, then maybe somewhere and on the East Coast or in somewhere down, probably in Memphis too. And then, you know, a nice chalet in the south of France.
Yes, of course. Yes, France.
Where's your favorite place that you've been to? That you would, or rather yet, if you had to move somewhere that you've been, where would it be?
You know, Italy sticks out. Although, the more I go to Greece, I'm kind of intrigued by Greece. I mean, it's an interesting thing. I mean, Italy is my favorite food, you know, history, topography, you know, all that kind of stuff. It's just, I mean, to live out in the sticks somewhere in Italy would be awesome. But it's, you know, one thing about Italy is that it's loosey goosey. You know what I mean? It's like everything is just kind of, hey, you know.
It's real light, like, yeah.
Yeah.
I found that.
Like, come, we have a coffee. We talk about it, you know, but nothing's really. it's not as is so like in Germany, everything is exactly the way it's supposed to be. You know what I mean? And so there's things about Germany I really like. But Italy to me is awesome. But as I said, the more I go to Greece,
And see, now I want you to put out a live album called Gristle in Greece. Please. If you could do one thing for me, just one.
Gristle in Greece. I mean, there are places in the States I like too, but it just everything is so damn expensive. You know what I mean? It's
yes, I do.
it's just getting crazy until something's got to give at some point. But I mean, I do. I always have fun out in California. I love Northern California. We stay with this really nice couple in Venice Beach when we go out there, and we're going to be staying there for like 6 days, and we're kind of using that as our home base, and we're going to play all over Southern California, but stay there. And, you know, man, it would be, I mean, but that, the place that they got, they moved in that area when it was not very built up. And now, you know, their area and all the, there's all these actors that live around there because it's been really, you know, pumped. A lot of money's been pumped into these places and whatnot. But man, if you could live there, be awesome. But you know, I don't have a cool few million in the bank, so I don't really see that being a possibility. But you know, there's things I love about, you know, going down. I like going down south, just because everything I love, from the music to the culture, you know, to the food.
Yeah, buddy.
You know what I mean? And you know, it's kind of a funny thing. Sometimes I'll listen to recordings and you know, you get excited and tempos kind of speed up a little bit and so on and so forth. I'm like, you know, we should just take the band and just go down south someplace and set up shop and just workshop playing for like a month in that environment, and we'd never rush again.
Yeah. Yep. Boy.
I remember the first time I sat in with Lonnie Mack. We were opening up for him, and Lonnie Mack was always cool to me. We did some shows, and his wife after the fact was like, "Lonnie always would refer to you as the guitar player from hell." And I'm like, "I'm going to take that as a compliment." But but I remember I was sitting in, and it took me a few bars to just kind of get used to just how far behind the beat they were. You know what I mean? Mm. And I was like, man. That is, and that's a thing that happens when you're, you know, playing roots music in that kind of environment for a long period. It's a thing. And,
you slow down, you start to relax.
Yes. Yes. And I'm all about that.
We interrupt this regularly scheduled gristle infested conversation to give a special shout out to our friends at Fishman Transducers, makers of the Greg Kock signature Fluence Gristletone pickup set. Can you dig that? And our friends at Wildwood Guitars of Louisville, Colorado, bringing the heat in the shadow of the Rocky Mountains.
I don't know. It's been fun traveling all over the country, and I do love all the different areas. But I tend to like, you know what I like about this area the most is that, I mean, there's people here, but a traffic jam here is like nothing. You know what I mean?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Oh, man. Going down Chicago is a drastic difference. Yeah. And people in LA would laugh at Chicago traffic.
Right. Exactly. So, with the Milwaukee area here, it's like you get a lot of the advantages of a big city without a lot of the hassles.
Yep.
And that's what's kind of cool about it. But, you know, there's other aspects of that as well. But it's been a good place to raise a fam. And now, you know, most of my, you know, my youngest is in college now. So there's nothing really keeping us here per se. And we could probably go elsewhere. But, you know, it's
Milwaukee's home.
Milwaukee's home. There it is.
And, you know, and it's a good thing that we got Mitchell Airport, you know.
Yes.
Anywhere in the world is basically accessible from Milwaukee.
Yep, and it's easy. It's an easy airport.
Exactly. And I would love, you know, I think I saw a post somewhere where they're saying, would you take a flight from Milwaukee to Chicago or Chicago to Milwaukee? And it's like, yeah, I've done it several times. Yes. Because I'll buy a plane ticket and it'll be leaving from Milwaukee, which is 20 minutes from my front door.
Right.
and then it takes another 20 minutes to go through everything, like from getting out of my car to sitting at my terminal. It's 20 minutes
right.
on a busy day.
Right.
You know, so I would take that anytime.
Exactly.
Or driving an hour and some change maybe to O'Hare and gosh knows how long.
Right. O'Hare's always an adventure.
Mm-hmm. That's why I'm always early. I'm so early. I think someone mentioned to me, they're like, you don't have to be so early. I said, yeah, I don't, but I am. Right.
Yeah, I always err on the side of way early just because I don't want to deal with any drama.
See, we think alike. We're very responsible, you and I. I'd rather be 3 hours early to a flight than 30 minutes like early. You know,
exactly. No doubt.
It's so because I can sit around and just enjoy the chill vibes, watch all the people running that are late, eat some food, you know, exactly. relax, catch up on some emails.
Exactly.
Versus running for my life to miss a flight that someone paid thousands of dollars for.
You know, what's a funny thing is that you know, most of the traveling now I do. I mean, I'm still in an airport, you know, at least once a month, you know, a couple times a month. But it used to be, especially back in the days where I was doing a lot more workshops and so on and so forth, I was flying all the time. And now I do a lot more driving and not as much flying, but still a fair degree of flying. But I noticed that I actually would feel more relaxed when I sat down, when I got into an airport. It's like most people would be more uptight when they get into an airport. That was my normal, was going into airports.
Yep.
So I'd be like uptight about this, that. And the next thing I'd get in the airport, I'd be like, because I knew yep. what to expect, which is just yep. the unexpected.
You and I are a lot alike. Oh, man. Like I
yeah,
think,
you know, flying is an interesting. I mean, just the whole traveling thing. I mean, people, I'm sure you get asked this quite a bit too. Do you like all that traveling? And you're like, listen, I get to go all over the world. People want to hear me do the thing I love to do. They want to feed me great food. I stay in nice places. I see stuff that you can't. I mean, what's not to like? I mean, yes, you miss your people at home. But I always tried to temper it with the fact that when I'm home. Most people, you know, when they're home, they're still working their day job 40, 50 hours a week.
Yep.
And so they're actually, I mean, I don't know, as far as hour for hour, you know, who's gone more, but the point is that when I'm home, I was home, but it's like,
yeah.
I love traveling. I just, you know, and I tell people not in an arrogant way, but I'm good at it. And I'm the reason why I say that, and I'm sure you're the same way. It's like, I know how to just roll with the punches. And if there's a problem, you just take care of it. And, and you know, if you lose your luggage or you just deal with it.
Mm-hmm. Oh, there's a bag somewhere in Germany with my, there's a bag in Germany with my name on it somewhere. Full of my awesome dress shoes and some of those, the passes from some of the festivals. I was like, oh man. But you know, kept going. I'll say this, and this is just between me, you, and whoever is watching / listening to this. One of us, I won't say which one, lost or had our passport stolen while we were in France.
Yes.
Right before our last show, and we had to go to Scotland the next day, which, as you know, they are no longer part of the European Union. So we needed a passport to go. So they unfortunately had to wind up staying in France, and I had to, you know, do all this problem solving at 3 a.m. Because we flew out. I think we had to leave for our flight at maybe 7 or something like that, or flew out, you know, shortly around that time. And they went to the U.S. Embassy in Paris and got an emergency passport and waited for me to finish the tour and a vacation. And we flew back on the same flight that we originally had. So, you know, everything worked out. We still had some fun, went partying in Paris and whatnot. once I came back to France, but it was very stressful.
You know what you just described? I was thinking you were just, I had the same thing happen to me. What town in France did your passport get stolen in?
Bordeaux.
Oh, mine was Marseille.
Okay, gotcha.
It was the weirdest thing, man. I was doing duo clinics and performances with my buddy Reggie Hamilton. And we didn't really have to be up early that day. So we were checking out of the hotel at noon and they were going to pick us up shortly after noon. So Reggie and I go down to the lobby and there's no one there because, you know, by noon, most people are gone, you know, doing whatever they're going to do.
Yeah.
And so we put our stuff down right by the desk and like he turned around and I go, I'm going to turn around and get some coffee. And we came back and he's waiting in the kind of front area for the guy who's coming to get us. And I started looking, I was like, where's my backpack? And I'm like, maybe I left it in the whole, in back in the room. So I go up in the room and I was like, no, it wasn't in there. Checked every, and I realized it's nowhere to be found. I said, I think someone took my backpack. So we talked to the guy at the front desk. I was like, do you have a security camera? And so sure enough, he looked at the security camera. We literally come down, put our stuff down. I turn my back and this guy comes, who's got like a jacket over his arm, just like grabs it, puts it underneath his jacket and grabs my backpack, puts it underneath the jacket and then leaves. My computer was in there, my wallet, my passport, everything. So now we're in Marseille and we have to fly. We're flying back to Paris and I've got no passport, but luckily the guy I was traveling with had a PDF of my passport on his phone. So at least I could fly from Marseille to Paris. And then we went right to the U.S. Embassy. And within 3 hours, I had a brand new passport.
Yeah.
We lucked out.
Happy ending.
But that's the kind of stuff we're talking about, right? It's like shit happens and you just have to deal with it. But and then when it's done, you're kind of like, yeah, we pulled that off. That was pretty cool.
Yeah. Oh, man. I'd probably write a book about just this past year alone of all the, don't know how we did that, but we did it. Right. from things as small as strings breaking on stage, amps going out, to messed up timing, having to drive all night. You know, because I do the majority of the driving for myself. But, you know, just all the wild things that you could never even, you know, dream of. I remember I was just minding my own business. I went to go help one of my friends. And I pulled over, I parked my car, got out, went, finished doing the work that they asked me to do. I come back and look at my car. I'm like, it's tilting to one side a little bit, ain't it? And I had run over a nail. And I was like, oh, I have somewhere to be. This is very unfortunate.
Oh.
So I put the spare on, put the full in the trunk, and I said, well, if I do 80 miles per hour for the next 20 minutes,
right.
No, I showed up a little bit late, but everybody was okay. I had everybody warm up the crowd for me, and you know, everything came out all right. But the average person would probably have a fit. And I was like, no, I just got to get it done. Let's go.
That's it. On this last tour East Coast, we had, which I think will be actually we did one tour after that, kind of the putting Toby's Tahoe and trailer kind of, it's served its purpose. It's now time to put miles on my new vehicle. So, but we had a leaf spring go out on the trailer when we were in Cape Cod. And, so we played in Cape Cod on a Friday night, and we didn't have to be in Burlington, Vermont until Monday, right? So we had 2 days off. And but we found a place in Cape Cod on a Saturday morning to take care of the leaf spring. And they had one leaf spring, the size we needed and all that kind of stuff. The guy's like, the other side looks good. I can't guarantee it. He goes, but you should be good until you get home. And so we took care of that. And then a week later on the same tour, we're outside of Philly, the other leaf spring goes. And, but again, you know, we found a place that you just deal with it. You just figure, this is what we got to do. And luckily we made all the gigs on time and yada, 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 yada. But it's an adventure, but it's kind of fun when it's just, it's just you and your immediate band figuring things out and just doing whatever.
Yeah. Oh, man. And that's the thing. You know, a lot of people ask, do we actually like each other? And I'm like, well, it's sometimes. Yes. Yes, we do. It's like, you know, I've met a lot of people who are really close with their siblings and cousins and friends and what have you. Well, it's much like that. If you get a good band, you know, that is not only good at, you know, playing their instruments, but, you know, talking, communicating, being friends, that kind of thing, then you've really lucked out. Like, there's not much more you can ask for.
Right.
So it's usually us versus the world, and, you know, going to countries where English isn't their first language, you know, we talk about anything, anywhere. Right.
Exactly.
and I got too used to that, I think. I want to say the first time I went over to France, because we were there for like 3 weeks, and I think we got back home, and I said something. I said, wait a minute, hold on. Everybody can understand me here. I got to slow down, slow my roll. Right.
Well, then you have all the different inside jokes in your own little language that you kind of get going in your little micropod of humans. And then you get back to your peeps at home, and you start saying, like, what the hell are you talking about?
Yeah, that doesn't make any sense. Was that supposed to be funny? It's like, yeah, it's hilarious. Why aren't you double over in laughter?
Right.
You had to be there.
Right, exactly.
And one of my favorite little stories that I have and tells a lot about me as a person is I forget what city in France, but there was a town over, it was Lille, and everyone's like, okay, we're going to go out, we're going to party tonight. And I was like, yeah, let's go. And my tour manager, took one look at me, and said, Stephen, you look kind of tired. And I was like, yeah, you're right. Let's go. I'm going back to the hotel. And so everybody else went up and party, and I went to bed. And that's just how I operate. You know, you never have to worry about me getting into too much trouble, because I like having fun just as much as the next person, but I will just as soon go to bed.
Yeah, I'm with you on that.
I was an old man around 2 years old, and I've only gotten older.
Well, you know, there's nothing like when you're on the road and you've done the show, everything's set, and you're back in your hotel, and you lay down, and you realize, I'm done for the day. I don't have to go anywhere. I don't have to see anybody. It's like anybody else, I suppose, at the end of the day. But there's something about it when you're on the road, when you're actually back at your room, you're like, oh, my God, I can just veg now until we got to hit it again.
Exactly. Oh, the best sleep I've ever had. It wasn't for a very long time, but it was this past summer. We were playing in Spain, which is the home of the siesta.
Yes.
That comes in handy because our slot was at 3:30 a.m.
Oh, Jesus.
And I was like, why? There, in my head, I'm like, there's nobody going to stay up this late. That's dumb. Who would do such a thing?
Right.
There's a stadium full of people just sitting there looking at me as I look at them. I'm like, all right, well, let's party.
That's insane.
So our slot was 9 minutes, so 3:30 to 5. We leave the venue, go straight to the airport, fly off to, I think it was Barcelona, and then we drove another 3 hours to Montpellier, which is my favorite city in the south of France. My goodness, love it. Would move there in a heartbeat.
Yeah.
And then we had a show later that night, that evening. So it's just, I can't sleep too well on country winding roads. It's just something about being a driver. It's like, if my body's shifting, I should be alert.
Right, exactly. I get it.
But both shows went fine, you know, but when I laid down, you couldn't move me. Or you probably could have physically picked me up, put me in a different room. I looked around and be like, huh, I guess I didn't bring any luggage into this room. And I'd go right back to sleep.
So what gear do you bring when you go over there? Do you just bring like a little pedal board and your guitar and that's it?
Typically, yeah. I'm not fortunate enough to be able to travel with my own amps and stuff yet, but I'm working on it, you know, get a little bit of notoriety. Yeah, yeah. But I typically bring my Red Stratocaster, which is my main instrument. It's got the two single coils and the humbucker at the bridge. I find, to me, that's like the most versatile Stratocaster type that I can make good use of. And then I have my pedal board, which I've got this wah pedal. It's a real McCoy. I forget the serial number or model number. But
so it is a McCoy. It's an old crybaby.
It's a cast. It must be cast iron or whatever, silver or whatever. Heck, it's solid in construction, and it sounds freaking amazing, dude.
Awesome.
I haven't heard a wah pedal as good through various amps, like from anyone. So I will be holding on to that until I can no longer hold.
Which Flying V do you have that you like to play?
Ooh, so it's a 97 Epiphone Carina V. So it's made in Korea, I want to say.
Yeah.
I saw it online of all places. It was on eBay for like maybe $500, $600, maybe something like that. And I was thinking, most kids get a car. Well, not most kids, but a lot of kids get a car for their 16th birthday. I bought myself a Flying V, and I'm telling you right now, best decision I could have made. I don't play it out too often, but every time I do, I'm like, yeah, this is why I bought this thing. It sounds good. All I did to it, I think, in the time I've owned it, is I've replaced the tuners because they weren't so good to begin with. But I busted one and said, well, you know, might as well just replace it to ones that work really very well. And then I flipped the magnet in the neck pickup to get that nice out of phase tone.
Oh yeah.
Ew, it's nasty.
You know what's funny is I just played Epiphone is making those Carina V's again. They're like a 59, and they have one at Wildwood, and it was like 5 pounds something, and it played and it sounded awesome. And I was like, I should just buy that. It was like, and it was cheap. It was like just over $1,000.
Yeah.
And it's like when you consider that you get like a Murphy aged V and it's going to be, you know, $13,000 or something like that.
Yeah.
And then I'm playing this little Epiphone. I'm like, I would just get this. But then I realized, you know, I got more guitars than I know what to do with.
No. There's a mathematical equation that denotes the amount of guitars. Yeah, the amount of guitars you need, X being the current amount that you have,
right?
Plus one. Always it's X plus one.
Well, it's a funny thing. I mean, I remember, I'm trying to think how many years ago it was, but hang on, I'm trying to turn off these notifications I keep getting from my message thing, and it's driving me insane. Anyway, I was up to like 50 guitars. I thought, man, that's insane. Because when I was doing the Fender thing, I would get guitars. And people always thought I worked for Fender. I didn't, the fact that they paid me, but I was never employed by Fender.
Yeah.
So everything I did was freelance, and it was freelance with all these different Fender entities all over really the world that I would make separate deals with when I would go out and do stuff. And so a lot of times, you know, they would send me these guitars, and it was kind of under the pretext of, well, we're going to send you some stuff we think you'll like. And if you like it, then why don't we use that as the focus of what you do this year? And then I would, in turn, use that on the records I was doing, and I would tie it all in, you know? That all seemed to make sense. But then I'd get in a situation where, okay, now it's the year later, we're using other stuff, and then Fender would be like, I would have stuff on my calendar. Like, well, in August, I'm doing, you know, 2 weeks here, and yada, yada, yada. And then it would get to be July, and it's like, oh, now it's just a weekend. And I'm like, great. But yeah. How much, you know, but I need to get paid, you know, I still need to pay my bills and whatnot. So I would sell the gear, you know, when I needed to. I was up to 50, then I was down to like 25. Mm-hmm. And then, which is insane because when I was, you know, when I was in my early 20s, I had, or even in my late 20s, I'd have my main guitar, a spare, my main amp and a spare done. That's all I had. And then, of course, you know, you get older and next thing you know, you get all these freaking guitars. And so then I started doing my thing with Reverend and I started having my own signature guitars and I'm at Wildwood and, you know, I'm like, oh, I'll get, and then COVID happened and they're sending me guitars to do videos of and some I wouldn't send back. And, you know, and I would buy them and so on and so forth. So then I got to the point where I was like, damn, And now I look around and I'm in this room now where I've got my, you know, my, I'm calling it my tempered storage facility, where we're speaking from. And I'm like, I've got, I mean, in a way it's kind of fun because I'm realizing I got guitars I totally forgot that I had.
Yeah, isn't that the best?
But then I'm thinking, yeah, but now I got to figure out, you know, at some point I got to figure out, well, my kids don't want to have all these guitars when, you know, hopefully I'm going to be around for a long time, Steven, don't get me wrong. But
yeah,
I'm thinking about consolidating, like maybe getting rid of a few things.
And then I don't live too far from you.
We'll set you up, Steven.
Oh, bless you.
But it's true. Yeah. You can never have too many guitars. I mean, even though I say that, it's like I'll end up getting something. I always do.
And that's the beauty of it. You know, I have probably 18 of them right now, and I only remember buying six of them.
Right.
I don't know. I mean, I'm grateful for, I don't know where they came from.
Right.
But they
seem to reproduce on their own volition.
When I expect when I return home, there will be another one waiting. That's just how this goes. But also, you know, I feel like every so often, like I'll look at something and I'll go, yeah, I want to buy it. I haven't bought anything for me in a while because my main focus has been, you know, growing the band and you know, covering other costs, all the odd costs that come with that. So
yeah.
That's what I consider a treat. So everyone, you know, hears, oh, you have 18 guitars. They're like, wow, you must have a lot of money, or you must spend a lot of money on guitars. I don't. I'm just very fortunate. I know a lot of people who do not want them anymore.
People don't realize too, is that they're, well, I suppose they do realize that they're tax deductible and they're part of our business, you know?
Exactly. I think I smell a tax deduction coming soon.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, that's coming right down the bin. And as a self-employed musician, isn't that fun?
It's the best. You know, I smile every time. I'm like, I'm going to go get me a little tax deduction.
That's it, man. I mean, it's all about the big tax deduction, without a doubt.
Ooh.
Because, you know, if you don't do it, you suffer.
Exactly. You know, my main guitar, the red Stratocaster I play.
Yes.
It's I like mentioning to folks, I only paid $250 for it. Virtually brand new, hardly played. Because, you know, everyone gets in their head about the cost of the guitar. It's got to cost, you know, at least $1,200 for it to be a good guitar. I'm like, no, you could buy a plank of wood. And if it plays good, congratulations, you have lucked out.
That's a fact. I mean, yeah, there's the myth of gear. And I just try to break it down to the fact that if you can afford an expensive guitar and it inspires you, let the good times roll.
Exactly.
If you can't and you buy what you need to get and it sounds great and it plays great and you could do your thing on it, let the good times roll. Where it gets a little, I mean, it just kind of is what it is, but people seem to give more credence to guitarists and their music if it's played on legendary shit. You know what I mean?
Yeah, all the vintage stuff.
If you're playing it on a vintage Les Paul or vintage Strat or, you know,
through a big old Marshall and everything. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, a lot of people are, let's just say the suspension of disbelief is much more in play because they've been, well, this is the real deal, as opposed to, well, actually, whatever the music is the real deal. And if the music's played on a Squire through a, you know, an old PV amp and it's getting the job done, then let the good times roll. But I think too often, you know, I mean, people who are into it, you know what I mean? I mean, obviously, the average Jamoke who's coming out to a gig doesn't really care per se, other than if they're not musicians or gear hounds, but they know certain iconography. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
If they see Bender, if they see Gibson, if they see Marshall, and then in their mind, it triggers a response.
Yeah.
I think. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Well, I mean, you've probably seen the meme of you know, there's the fake Marshall full stacks,
yes,
and then like the little line six or something like that behind it that's mic'd up, and that's right, what everyone's listening to. Well, you know, you go out there, you see a wall of Marshalls, you're going to think, wow, these people are going to kill this. This is going to be amazing. Holy crap. Right. You know, this is going to be legendary. This is what rock is all about, right?
Right.
No, those are all fake. Right. I've met several. I think I've met like two or three artists who play through that much equipment. And I'm just like, dude, how can you still hear?
Well, that's the thing. I mean, we get complaints about the amps that we use,
uh-huh,
like, oh my God, you guys are so loud. I'm like, yeah, it is loud. But can you imagine if Cream was in here, or Hendrix, or the Allman Brothers, or Mountain, or Led Zeppelin, or any of the bands that were the bands that came out and did this thing for reals back in the day? I mean, they all had not one, but 200 watt Marshall stacks dimed.
It sounds better that way.
That's the only way they sound. I mean, the only way you get them to sound good is you crank them. And that's what just absolutely amazes me. People are like, especially like when you're in Germany and you show up in these rooms and they're like, it's so loud. Would you mind turning down? It's like, we're a band. Did you not know? Did you not get the flyer? You know what I mean? Like, I mean, just the way Dylan hits the snare is going to guarantee that we're going to be over your volume control.
And
you know what I mean?
That's the thing. You know, I wanted to explain this to several people. It's like, you know, even if it sounds good out there to you, up here on stage, that drum, that's what sets the volume out here. I got to be able to hear me. I got to be able to hear the bass player. And I got to be able to, you know, I'll feel the drums regardless. I think we played one larger festival where Victor was so far behind me, it didn't matter. You know, and that was wild to me because, you know, I've been in places where they're smaller than the desk my phone is on right now, you know?
Right. Yep.
But you know, once you hear how loud that snare drum is, along with the crashes and the rides,
right,
it's like, how in the world do you expect me to play quieter than that? Like, I'm carrying the melody here.
Right.
If you want to hear ting, 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 all night, go for it.
That's the thing. It's like for us, we're a loud band. There's just no two ways about it. And, you know, and we'll go into some people like, well, they were really loud. I was like, and then you go into other rooms where we just do our thing and no one says a word because the place is treated for volume. It's a music room. And they're like, that's what happens here. But so many places like, oh, let's have bands. And then they'll be like, dude, oh, well, you know, there's a legendary place. Everyone's played here. It's like, we played this little place in New York, in Piermont, New York. Place called the Turning Point, little place, but man, we played it at battle volume and the place just ate it up. You know what I mean?
I love it like that.
And you play a place in Germany that size and it's not treated at all for music and it's just reflective as hell. And who's ever the sound guy is just like, I remember this.
Yeah. They're freaking out, aren't they?
we had a sound guy in Aachen who's a friend of my buddy Klaus. The sound man's name, and I made him show me his driver's license, and I took a picture of it. And his name was Bernd Fucker, F-U-C-K-E-R. And luckily, he was a cool sound guy. But I was like, this is the greatest thing I've ever seen. But a lot of times you get these sound guys in Deutschland especially who just are like, it has to be maybe quieter. And I'm like, this is quiet for us.
Yeah.
So it just is what it is. And then you just realize you just got to make little mental notes of here are the rooms that are going to work for us and here are the rooms that are not going to work for us.
And I got a taste of that. I think the first show of the summer of my summer tour of Europe was at the Montreal Jazz Festival, which to me, that's still, I don't believe that happened. It doesn't feel like that was, you know, I don't feel like I've worked to that level yet, but there I was.
Awesome.
But it was, we were sound checking and I thought I was playing pretty quiet. And they're like, can you please turn your amp? I was like, oh, yeah, I guess. I turned it down some. And they're like, a little bit more. And I was like, okay, well, this is going to suck tonight, isn't it? Right. And, you know, if I could go back in time, I would have said, hey, find me a baffle, anything you can want, anything you want to use.
Right.
Because you give me this what I don't, it was like a I think like a deluxe, Fender deluxe or something like that. You give me something this size and you point it at the crowd and now you want me to be quiet?
Right. Well, and a deluxe isn't even that loud.
That's what I'm saying. And I listened back to some of the room videos that I heard. I was like, it sounds so wimpy. You know, it's not, you know, as full as my normal sound. And even though it was a great show and everybody had fun, you know, I had my wireless pack on. So I was walking through the crowd playing. I ordered a beer that never showed up. You know, I did all kinds of things during that night. But, you know, in my heart, I'm like, oh, it could have been so much better.
That's the thing I just don't understand. It should be, and you think that would be an environment where they would totally have it down. But I mean, there's an even a better example is that you never know. But it should be about what can we do so that you guys are as comfortable as you can be to do your thing. Not how can you can conform to play for our. You know what I mean? It's like that's not what this is about. This is about us doing our thing. You wanted us. This is what we do.
Exactly.
And now, it's just people are weird about it. But then again, you just have to find the places that are, you know, most conducive to that kind of thing. And if they're, you know, obviously an iconic venue like that, you get through it and you do what you got to do. But
oh, yeah, that was the most yes, sir, absolutely kind of situation. Right. I'm like, I don't want to get, I want to come back here.
Right.
Please, whatever you want. You want to play left-handed? I'll do it. I'll learn just for you.
Right, exactly. Well, listen, my friend, thanks so much for taking some time to talk with us today. I'll let you get back to having fun. We're basically in the same time zone, right? Are they central time down there?
We are 3 hours ahead.
Oh, 3 hours ahead. That's right, because it's east. Wild.
By a little bit, I feel. I've stopped thinking about time as a real thing a long time ago. After I went to Africa, I said, oh boy, this time's not real at all.
Right.
No, it makes no sense at all.
Absolutely. Well, listen, my friend, you travel safely, and I will see you when you return. And I'll let you know when this airs. I'm trying to get a bunch of these done before I head out on the road again. And then they're usually released on Thursdays. So I think they're going to start airing middle of January. And then away we'll go.
All right, my friend. I appreciate you.
Likewise, my friend. Take it easy. Great seeing you and talking with you as usual. And we'll hopefully see you soon.
Yeah, see you soon, my friend.
Take it easy, Stephen. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Folks, thanks so much for tuning in. We certainly do appreciate you stopping by and partaking in the most savory, chewable gristle this side of Cucamonga. Gregory Kauk, looking forward to seeing you again next week, even though I won't actually see you, but I'll sense your presence.